Unlock the secrets to purpose-driven leadership with Andy Christensen. From scaling businesses to climbing mountains, this episode of The Marketing Madmen dives deep into emotional intelligence, workplace culture, and turning advisory into triumph. Don't miss these game-changing insights on today's episode of The Marketing Madmen.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to The Marketing Madmen with Nick Constantino and Trip Joel.
Happy Saturday. Welcome to the Marketing Madmen. Trip Job and Nick Constantino here live from the Battery. And Nick, we are going to talk about life, business. I mean, we got it all, I think, today.
Yeah, yeah. And we're just going to hit it running because the dude that we're about to interview and have on the show has climbed a bunch of mountains and has been in planes and gone fast. And so we're just going to hit this thing running as fast as we can. So to do that, I'm going to introduce Andy Christensen. Andy, how you doing, bud?
That's great. Best intro I think I've ever had. Big mountains, big planes, fast.
We got to set it up. We got to set it up, right? So I have on here a motivational speaker, a TED Talk speaker, how to motivate, and a host of a tenacious podcast. And if you're calling it a tenacious podcast, there's a reason behind it. So that's all those setups. We're good to go. So give us the, I just said all the things you are now. Get us up to speed on how you got there.
It's my greatest trait, being tenacious, because I grew up a blue-collar kid in Cleveland, Ohio. By a single dad, you know, and it was really like being raised by wolves, and I had to figure it out on my own. It was catch as catch can, and I realized that if I worked hard at 11, I started my first business, cutting grass. Then I raked leaves. Then I shoveled snow. Then I learned how to paint houses, and there's other things that weren't legal I won't mention, but I learned how to make money and make things happen. And that's been my trait in business. Yeah. And along the way, I got a college degree somehow, bunch of certifications, wrote a book after flunking English in college. So again, tenacious. I just get in there and I make things work.
Yeah, yeah, love it. So military background?
To some degree. I wrote the book that you have in your hand called The 40-40 Principle. And a guy in the military invited me to England, an American base over there, Mildenhall, to come speak. And that started this love affair that we both had with leadership.
Cool.
Then he moved to the States. We created this leadership course together. Cool. I teach it separately. He teaches it at the Air Force. And I've been an adjunct professor of leadership at the Air Force for about 15 years.
Yeah, so that's military adjacent, but you actually probably see it from a completely different perspective because you get to see it from the outside looking in, and not many people are granted that opportunity. It's usually you only see it from the inside out, so that's got to be unique for you.
I'm one of 1% of civilians that have been in a fighter jet, a T-38 trainer jet.
Nice.
That's cool. Mach speeds.
That's cool. So that's we're going to go mach speed. Yeah. All right. So you know, look, TED Talks, all these things, they have become such a part of nomenclature. You looked on LinkedIn, everyone's doing a TED. There's so much stuff going on all the time. Talk a little bit about right now what your day-to-day is. Talk about what you do to motivate, who you speak in front of, how these things are being booked, because I think we're going to open up to a lot of conversations of when you need to find someone like Andy. If you want to be a speaker, here's how you do it. I think this is just going to pave the course for a lot of different conversations.
Yeah, it's a longer story than I'm going to give it for obvious reasons, but I started out in college as a finance guy. I'm a business guy. Like I said, I started my first business when I was a teenager, and I thought I wanted to go make millions of dollars. And at some point after I launched a product called Fruit 2.0 from a company called Verifine, we sold it to Kraft. It was the first fruit-flavored, no-calorie water, so spring water. With Splenda.
Gotcha.
I couldn't believe no one had invented it, but we did. We sold the company. At that point, I was 37. I realized, I don't know if I got hit on my head somewhere that year, but I departed from business, so to speak, to I wanted to help people. I just woke up one day and I said, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I started meeting with people in coffee shops, and I would ask them questions about what they wanted to do with their life. And they said, can we do this again? I'm like, this was really helpful to you? I thought I was the only guy interested in
this.
Well,
you said in your intro, you make things happen and you make money. Well, sometimes they're not the same. Sometimes making things happen isn't necessarily about the money.
And maybe it's just people need someone to ask them the question so they can come up with the right answers, which is what I've found really is what a coach does.
Yeah.
You're not a consultant coming in with the best idea. You're asking that person what's their best idea because no one's generally listening.
Yeah.
We're all so busy talking.
That's the best salesperson. That's the best anything in business is you want to get. Now, sometimes you can add influence to get someone to the answer you want them to get to. But ultimately, you're trying to do is guide somebody down. And it's funny. And I think the biggest problem, you know, I met so many motivational speakers and business coaches. A lot of times you meet them and the first thought is all you are is a shrink to a guy that can't admit he needs help. Like, don't call yourself a business coach. Like, you're just laying him down on the couch and listening to him, and he's paying you an exorbitant amount of money to do so. So I think that there's a fine line between, and look, the point is that I think we've gotten to a point now where everyone on LinkedIn is giving advice. You go on Instagram, and it's a million people that are trying to give you advice, and then you start reading their resumes, and like, who am I taking advice from? What is this? You went through it. You sold a business. You know, I like how you glanced over the illicit activities that made money. You know what? That's the people I want to hire. You know, you did those things. You know how to run numbers and keep it away from the cops. That's probably a skill set in there. That's something that's a benefit to me in my career and everybody else around them. You know, don't do it in the building, but what you do at home is none of my business. So I think what one of the reasons that people gravitate towards you is it besides authenticity, besides the fact that you're tenacious, you are probably the manifestation of what they wished they could be in themselves, but either maybe couldn't when they were young, or they just want to be that because that's what people think of themselves as, right? I had a similar upbringing. I was one of four boys, but like I remember at 9 years old driving my bike in Queens to go get pizza down the plate in Queens. Like, you know, the murder rate in Queens in the 90s? I didn't know there was a murder rate. I knew that I had a bunch of Korean friends and that the gangs they were affiliated with would protect me. Years old.
But like, if you look like you own the place, they let you buy.
Exactly. You look like you own the place and you don't do stupid stuff. Yeah. You don't need to be making eye contact with people. Walk by, head on a swivel, do your thing. No one will ever bother you. They look for targets. As long as you are confident in your steps, no one's going to look at you as a target. They're going to look at you as, wait, what's this guy doing here? Which is a better thing. Anyway, okay. We went very, very fast. Okay. So what I want to talk about now, one of the things that has really come up that you have put some time in is scaling. Okay. So when we talk about business, when we talk about, it seems to me, and Chip, you can probably chime in here, that business tends to be really good at the 1 million to about the 20, 25 million range. That's where one person can do it. They can hire a staff of people they trust, maybe even 30, 35.
I think the stats are such that very few make it from 1 to 10. I think that 8, 9 is kind of a threshold.
That stagnates.
I think if you get to 10, actually, from there, I think they tend to go more. That seems to be a pretty
Then let's
critical.
Talk about that 10 to 25 range. Yeah. Let's give that so we have some numbers on it. That 10 to 25 range. Everybody, that's a lot of the advice you're giving now. That's a lot of this guy's is scaling. How do you scale your business? How do you put people in place? So talk about in your career how you found out that's something that you wanted that you could help people with. Obviously, you did it with your own company. You scaled it to a point where it was going to be sold. But talk about how you get to that point and when you realize that it's something that you're going to need help with.
Yeah, I've got a line that I love, which is every 4 years, you're a freshman again. Mm-hmm. And I think senioritis, and you can have senioritis at any age in life.
Yeah, I had it as a junior and a senior.
Not just school years, you know. And I think the biggest problem that I see, the biggest problem I do see is senioritis. A person starts a business, they get some degree of success, and then they're called them a senior, and they believe that if they just hit rinse and repeat for how they got there.
They put it in autopilot.
They do. And they wonder why they stagnate. And let's call it 1 to 5 million or 5 to 10. I about every 5 million, I see this happen. You're a freshman again. And something needs to change. Phil Knight, the number one quote on his mantra list is, our business is always changing.
Yeah.
Phil Knight, Nike.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest lesson I don't think people learn.
Yeah.
They stay the same.
Yeah. And I think it's, you even have the case studies, right, of your Kodaks and your Xeroxes and your Blockbusters and these chains that ran on autopilot. And look, let's not be fools here. They made so much money, right? Even if the company went bankrupt, the executives and all the people with stakes in that made a lot of money over that time frame. It's always the lowest level investors that end up getting screwed in the end that kind of hitch their wagon at the wrong time. But there's, again, I think this is going to bring me to the next thing. And I think I want to spend the next segment talking about this, but let me set it up. I think one of the problems is that we talk about emotional intelligence and self-awareness, and we go into such depth in it. But the more successful you are, the actually harder it is to have self-awareness. Because what you like doing is you like starting to the smell of your own farts. And I know that, but it's a graphic statement. But when you start thinking you're so good, and you have to an extent be in business, it's hard to really prospectively look at things. And I think that's where a lot of the flaw is. So I think we're going to talk the next segment about scaling, about emotional intelligence, about your self-awareness that allows you to realize that you need help. But what do you think the biggest blockade is? If you had to pick one thing, obviously autopilot, but that stops people from pushing forward. Is it just complacency with where they are? Is it just they close the circle so they don't have any confidants that are telling them to grow? What do you think the biggest factor in that complacency is?
Army of one. I am my own solution. I see it all the time. I will not mention the specific name of the company, but they're the largest chicken retail restaurant chain in the country. And they are some of the best at this. In fact, the owners, the franchisees of those restaurants, if they are in the store every day of the week, they're not successful. The most successful ones are rarely ever there because they have duplicated themselves. They have found a way to get a general manager in there that is as good, if not better than them, at running the business. And I think that's the solution. I believe that's the solution, is you've got to delegate, is the simple way of putting it. But nowadays, you can't really find enough people to delegate to. You have to learn to coach them up.
Yeah.
So the business owner of today has to bring someone in and realize they either need to hire someone to coach them leadership skills or coach them themselves, apprentice them. We used to have apprentices.
Yeah. But in most cases, and if especially if this is their first business, that's what they did. They became the business. They ran the business, and they don't know how to do something differently, correct?
That's their wheelhouse. They're good at it, or they wouldn't have gotten to where they are. But the hardest lesson to learn is, it's like having children. You know, you have to treat them one way when they're infants, another way when they're young, another way when they're teenagers, and then an entirely different way when they're adults. And if you don't evolve, and that's really what a business owner needs to do, you're going to be stuck.
Yeah.
Do you ever see instances where a business owner realizes they need someone, they probably can't do it, and they actually bring someone in to be that operational arm, and they do what they do?
Oh, yeah. Those are the smart ones, and that's where we need to go, is how do you get there?
Yeah.
And that's humility, and that's having emotional intelligence, being able to pull back and delegate and say, hey, I'm not the entire solution.
Yeah, and I think in my interactions with business owners, and we tend to be that 8 to 20 million range. The biggest problem is the ego involved in being a business owner, because you, for a while, when you're scaling that business from 0 to 10 million, you have to be the boss.
That's
you have to make decisions.
There.
That's what gets you there. But then the point when you get there, it is very hard, one, to share the knowledge you've learned in a way that's not condescending, and two, to take somebody else in with an external perspective and say, come teach me. And I think that's the problem, is there's a person who's built for 0 to 10 million. There's probably a person who's built for 10 to 30 million. And then there's probably a person built for 30 million plus. But that's not what we're teaching people. We're teaching people just keep growing. It's good for the economy. It's good for those around you. So when we get back from the break, we're going to dive in on that. But I think that's a great intro. We covered a lot really fast, but I think it's the way to do it. You've been listening to The Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we'll be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men. Trip Job and Nick Constantino here. And, you know, right before the break, we were talking about humility, kind of delegation. And, you know, I think that really brings into a topic we bring up a lot, is emotional intelligence or emotional IQ.
Yeah, and we kind of bash it every once in a while, you know, bring it up. I just think whenever something becomes a buzzword, that it becomes something that is just either taken advantage of or just milked to. I think, you know, I understand, first of all, it is as important. The motivations of people have changed so quickly, right? The baby boomer, my dad went to work every day, didn't ask questions, did it because that's what he thought he had to do. Stood in traffic, came home, did the same routine, because his generation, that's what they were taught to do. Coming off the greatest generation, that's what he was taught to do. If you look now, each person is so differently motivated that it is not passing your intelligence, it is gaining emotional intelligence from them that I think is required of being a leader. One of the things that I found is that I don't like relating back to sports because I don't think it applies everywhere, but it's a good application. Michael Jordan could have never been a coach. Shit, he can't even be an owner. I mean, the team is just a disaster. So, but it just goes to show you that just because you're the best, and what do sales managers especially do? Yeah. What do companies want to do? They want to take their best salespeople and they want them to manage. And they think that that's how it works. So, Andy, in your experience, talk a little bit about what emotional intelligence means to you, where you saw some vulnerabilities in the teachings that have allowed you to help these businesses grow.
Emotional intelligence, what a heated or explosive topic. Like, I don't even know if most people like the word emotion tied into business, because we don't fully understand it. So it's a little bit of a dangerous or a very dangerous topic. And I'll tell you quickly how I learned about emotional intelligence. And I'm sorry, it's a personal example, but I took my wife to, she knows this story and she laughs, but I took her to counseling to get her fixed.
Yeah.
You get her right, because we were about 15 years in the marriage, and certainly it wasn't me. right?
I'm throwing air quotes up for you. Yeah, don't worry.
All right. Pause, power of the pause. Yeah. And so we went to the therapist, and after about a month, therapist said, how are we doing? Checked back in with me, and I said, you know, we're doing great, because she gave us some stuff to do, and she was doing it, and we were doing it. And she said, well, that's good. Hey, tell me your story. I said, me? What do you want? Why do you want to hear about me?
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody asked me, I'll talk about me all day. But I was like, why here? Why do I want to pay for that?
Yeah. Right.
She said, humor me.
Yeah.
A year later of visits back and forth, a year later, my wife a month, me a whole year, I did not have EQ, what I call social intelligence, emotional intelligence. It's heart skills versus head, right? Intellectual intelligence, IQ, intellectual quotient. EQ is emotional quotient. We all get it now because it's been out for 25 years, but I don't know how many of us really do it. I had to go through a year of therapy just to get it. And I don't know if I fully have it now. I think I do, but that's always a dangerous place to be. So I like to work with people that are hungry, that want to get better. And I don't think if you're not hungry, man, we're just taking data in. We're really good at talking about it. Right. I don't know if we're really good at doing it. And that's what I see in business today. The ones that are doing well, say it and do it. I have a quote that I love. It's on the back of all my note cards, and it said, the proof of desire is in the pursuit. So talk is cheap.
Yeah.
I want to see people do it. I have a tattoo right here that says S.A. Quam Vadiri on my left shoulder. It's our family motto. And that means to be rather than to appear. S.A. Quam Vadiri. That's what business people need to be to make it in this day and age.
Isn't there? There's different levels, and that some people maybe eventually get emotional awareness, which you're talking about, but don't want to act on it. They might at least can spot it, but it's not for them or whatever. There's some people who can't even, you know, even further to the left, let's say, because they're not even aware of it, and that's not how they do it.
They have to look up what emotion, what empathy means.
Right.
Yeah. Like I did.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny where look, everyone knows it's something you have to have. Since I've been managing people, and again, I have 25 to 65 age ranges. So the way you treat emotional intelligence, we're a small company that does big things. We're always in the limelight with the Braves in Georgia. So it's a unique beast that we are. But where it really started coming out in me is I started really looking into the past. So I started reading books, you know, Ray Dalio and Fareed Zakaria, that are these different perspectives of how the world was working. In fact, I'm reading one now about salt. And it traces the history of the world from the salt trade, pretty much. It's the whole history of the world, because it's this thing that is so important. And what I've learned is first of all, to understand how insignificant the things that in your life happen, we have to look backwards to see most of these things have repeated, right? Everyone's like, these are unheralded times. No, these exact same times have happened many times throughout history, right? The USA is at the end of its empire, 300-year empire time, the economic cycle, the business cycle. This has happened. So once you know it's already happened, that means it shouldn't be scary. And when things are not scary, you are able to speak to people in a way that rationalizes, hold on, guys, before we start doing this, this is what you need to get out of this. I am not training you to be good at 680 The Fan. I'm training you to be good. It is the owner of this company's job, but to pay you enough to keep you here. And I know it's Steve Jobs and Simon Sinek. There's all these guys now that say this, but I didn't, looking in the right now, looking in the future wasn't it for me. It was looking to the past that helped me get a better understanding of what's happening around me, that helped me build my emotional intelligence, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Wise, very wise.
So
I mean, I think, you know, I had CEO many years ago, and his thing was, you know, when people don't know, don't understand, they make it up. And when people make it up, they usually, it's negative, right? So
sometimes brilliant,
that,
but yeah, maybe,
but, you know, and so it's going back to, you know, what are you able to share? What are you able to, and you know, you're talking about actions. I mean, I'll share right now, things that my team are going through. I'm going through, we just put my dad into memory care. You know, it's one of those things that I could just, you know, take vacation and not be involved and not tell people what's going on. But I'm open with my team in that, hey, I'm going to be away. I'm not going to be available this day. Normally you can catch me, da, da, da. I've got one person on my team who's going through a very family issue, and they said, well, I'm just going to, you know, I think I need to take the morning off. I said, it's your family. You need to take the whole day. If you need to send anything to me, send it to me, whatever. And to me, it's more about you do talk about it, but you show it in your action versus hiding things. I think in 20 years ago, you know, it would just be, all right, I'm just going to kind of block off my calendar and not tell anyone what's going on. And I'm the boss and I can get away with that. But that doesn't work, I don't think.
But you know what? That was, it was reinforced. Like growing up, being vulnerable, the goal was to eliminate vulnerability.
Yeah.
Do not be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then Brené Brown comes along, the author,
yeah,
and does the TEDx. And it's like vulnerability is now a superpower.
Yeah.
And so a whole generation or two have had to learn to adapt and embrace that. And it actually shows authenticity.
It actually is. They've done all these studies that psychologically, the trustworthiness. So if you take a person, there's a spectrum of four boxes. If you take a person who's attractive and smart, that shows vulnerability, their trust immediately goes upward if they take those things. But if you take a person who's not smart and not attractive and they're vulnerable, they immediately go backwards the other way. People don't want to hear from them. They want to see the people who they envy subconsciously. Of course, no one's going to say they envy anybody. They want to see the people in which they envy be vulnerable because that makes them relatable to them. So it is the scale of it's an incredible thing.
Is that why, you know, Tom Brady talks about the yoga instructor and everything? Is that to make him more likable?
Hey, he got caught cheating, man. He showed vulnerability many times. He got caught cheating many times. He showed vulnerability. You know, Giselle broke his heart. He showed vulnerability. Look, now I'm going to hit this from the other side because I think one of the problems is once this starts mixing into the lexicon, people also take advantage. Yeah. And I have plenty of people that work for me that are like, oh my God, I need a mental health day. I'm like, it's the 2nd of January. You had off for 2 weeks. What do you mean you need a mental health day? So I think the problem is that once we get to a point where we go down these pathways, people find ways to exploit it. And I'm not saying consciously. I'm saying subconsciously, like you said, you're either the tenacious person that wants to push through. And it's like, look, dude, you know, I don't want to be that guy. Mental health isn't a new thing. You think you're the only person with ADD? Are you freaking kidding me? Anxiety is a defense mechanism from when we used to have to run from wild animals. This is not, oh my God, I woke up and I'm just so stressed out. So I think, and I also think the word emotional screws it up. Because like you said, especially as men, emotion is not something that's talked about, okay? But one of the kindest things you can do to people is rip the freaking Band-Aid off and tell them right away. The worst thing you can do, if we're talking emotional intelligence, is belabor a point because you're afraid to have the confrontation. And I think the root of a lot of these problems in business are people are afraid of confrontation, for whatever reason, that they're afraid of confrontation. Do you see that? Are you seeing where people are just, they won't make the decisions and the impact for whatever reason?
I use this assessment tool. I use a lot of tools with businesses because people need to know, they need a diagnostic to know where they're not doing well and where they are doing well. 92% of people lack the desire to face conflict. So 92% is conflict avoidance.
By the way, we did not plan any of this. I didn't know he had a stat waiting for me. I just went on a rant. I didn't know he had a stat waiting for me. So this is working even better than I thought. So 90% of people have an innate part of them that avoids conflict.
It's a judgment index tool called the judgment index. And it measures people's judgment. And part of judgment is
can I borrow that tool? Can I borrow that tool? Yeah. I would like to run that on every salesperson I have.
And
you
so
should.
Let's go from there. And this is a word I know, Andy, you're waiting to hear. But so then how do you create in a business a culture that includes accountability and also includes, you know, some of that emotional IQ within there?
Accountability to me is access and information.
I was gonna say someone, transparency. Yeah.
Someone has to grant you access and some degree of information, right? Otherwise,
what are you being held accountable to?
Otherwise, what is it? Micromanagement, bullying, nagging.
Yeah.
So I don't know as if true accountability can happen without that. I'm not sure that answered your question.
I think transparency, that was the immediate word if you wanted one word, but you're right. If you can't, you can't hold somebody accountable to metrics to which they don't understand. And it's actually the biggest problem with marketing, if I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
The biggest problem with marketing is that someone's like, okay, well, we're measuring these results. We do this, okay? Well, you're going to tell me what you're holding me accountable to? Or do you want me to just magically guess it so you can hold it against me later? Yeah. Don't hold somebody accountable to a metric to which you can't measure and isn't clear and easy to understand. This is not new business principles. This has been around for the dawn of time.
Psychological ownership says you come up with those together, and the person that you want to hold accountable comes up with their own accountability. Yeah. Usually they're way more adapt to wanting to be accountable to that than if it's applied to them.
Yeah, I love
certain
it.
Certain personalities.
But that's self-awareness and that EQ also. One, the manager has to trust the person enough to allow it to happen. And two, the person has to look in enough and say, one, what I've been doing to date has not been good enough. Or two, man, I had a really good year. I don't think I can duplicate that next year. Let me set it a little bit lower. You have to be self-aware. Because I'll tell you this, I've had meetings, those exact meetings, and I have to give the people their numbers. And if you don't know your numbers, what are you holding yourself to? That's almost an embarrassment. So again, this is why we're having this conversation. Right. It is a very hard angle to strike. What I add, when you meet people, can EQ be taught? And I think this is one of those things. Talk about, is it something that's innate in people and you're just bringing it out? Or do you have methods of actually training people how to be better at it?
Well, it's a great question. The father of emotional intelligence, Daniel Goleman, says it's a learned trait more than it is a inborn trait. And being self-aware, being others aware, being relationally aware, those are things that generally people learn. Mm-hmm. You might learn it as you saw your father do it, which is a large way I saw. My father was brilliant with people, and I was like, how do you do that? I can never do that. And now I'm probably as good, if not better, than he was. And all our kids look at me and they're like, I can never do what you do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But then but that's part of the question, though. That was probably innate in you. You just needed something to bring it out. By being influenced by your father made it something that was somewhere in there.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then you realize in culture and in business, oh, people skills matter.
Well, it gets reinforced, right, by either positive actions or negative actions.
Well, they did a study. Dale Carnegie, the first self-help book ever written, How to Win Friends and Influence People. They did a study at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh of what makes a person successful. Did you ever hear this one? That 15% of how people are successful is technical aptitude. So your technical abilities. The other 85, you want to guess?
Interpersonal.
Charisma, interpersonal.
Yes, it's the people skills part. Yeah. Even when that study was done back in, I believe, the 40s, that was that important.
Yeah. Sure. So we were chatting during the break, and I know you've got a number of things with that. So then let's take it to culture and business. What are your thoughts today? What do you see, and what are some of the challenges ahead?
So the smartest thing I've heard in the last few years about culture. Well, let me define culture. Culture to me is just a combination of the things we say and do on a daily basis, at work, at home, wherever you want to define that culture. You already have a culture. The question is it the culture you want? Mm-hmm. And most people think a better corporate culture is we're going to put in free snacks. We're going to get
we're going to have a happy hour with a ping pong table. Every tech company on earth.
Table. Yeah.
And there anyone's playing beer pong anyway, so it's destroyed in a week.
It's great. I even heard with football teams, you know, the big trend now is if a new coach comes into an NFL team or a college team and there's a ping pong table, it's leaving. And if there isn't one, one's coming in.
There you go.
But anything to designate something new is here. And so the biggest thing in these cultures now, if you remember from college, if you went to college, or you may have heard of Maslow's hierarchy, it was this big thing. Abraham Maslow said that at the bottom of it is like food and shelter. But at the top, four or five stages, is self-actualization. You know, for the first time in history, we have a culture, a workplace like you have where you work, where people are at self-actualization. This is the biggest problem and opportunity because the millennials and centennials are all expecting self-actualization type things at work.
Let's define that for a second. Yeah. Give us the self-actualization before some people just make their own perception what it is. Give us what you mean.
Well, let's start at the basics. Most bosses still today think, I'm just providing for you to have food and shelter. You can pay your rent. You've got a job. You should be happy. And a lot of millennials and centennials, so millennials are 44 down to about 27, and the centennials are now 26 and below. And they are looking for this self-actualization.
Impact. Hey, they're creating impact.
Yeah. Can I understand what our purpose is here at work? Why do we have core values, but I don't see them on the walls? Why don't we talk about them? Like, why are we not actualizing these things? And then furthermore, they want somebody to help them with their self-actualization. Like, help me come up with mine. That's where they're at.
Yeah. And now I see what you're saying, because the opportunity is that if you can portray that from the top down, people buy in. The negative side is you should figure that out for your freaking self. Like, that's not something that I am telling you to do. But that being said, I've met so many different kind of people. Yeah. I've trained so many different kind of people. There are some people that you can hammer them. They're going to always want to be sheep. they're going to always want to be told to do. Do I want them on my sales staff? I'll save that conversation for a different time. But I think that's part. If you are aware of yourself, it is easier to be aware of other people. And in my first 5 years of managing, it was probably the hardest thing. I was like, I get it. Why don't you? And then once you remove that and you said, wait a second, you work better when I give you a set of parameters. Military kids are the greatest example. Okay. A military kid, if you say, I don't understand why you're not doing this, they're going to look at you like crazy. But if you say, here are the parameters, work in these, they'll be like, okay, and they'll walk out.
You just identified the curse of knowledge. When you said, hey, I've been doing this for 5 years, just do it the way I'm doing it. I understand it. Why don't you?
Yeah.
We all do that. And they're doing that. They're coming to work saying, I want to know what my purpose is in life. Why don't you want me to know what my purpose is in life? Why aren't you helping me? You know, we're all coming in with this curse of knowledge mindset that we woke up in the morning with. So I'm about to publish a book next month called Minute to Meaning. It's how to find your life purpose in under 1 minute. And it's super achievable. I do it all the time in groups and whatnot. And this is something that they're going to love to have at work. Like, hey, business owner, you can do this in a minute. Yeah. You're going to be self-actualizing your whole staff.
Yeah, I see. Look, again, so millennials, one of the weird things about millennials is they're a very transitional generation. So I'm the older part of the millennial, but like I grew up with tech, but I also had a cell phone with a cord on it. So I'm that transition I saw what it was to what it is now. And I think we have a very important part, and every generation has some extent in the business thing. So I've seen everyone across the board. And it's not only age anymore. I think it's also upbringing, right? If you were born in a certain generation of this country, everyone was around the same socioeconomic status, right? Your picket fence was part of it. Now you meet people and you're almost immediately gauging mommy, daddy money. You know these things about them because of the behavior. So that is another wrinkle in this. It used to just be an age thing. It used to just be, you know, the Yankees talk faster than the Southerners. Like, it used to be easy. Now you sit around these people and you're making these guesses. And I found myself a lot of times guessing so completely wrong about it, but they're part of the culture now, which again makes it so hard to self-actualize and make a set of parameters to help people self-actualize.
4 to 5 different generations, one marketplace.
Yeah. All right, how much time we got, man? Man, oh, man, I have no idea what's
going
on. We got
another 4 or 5 minutes. I have no idea what's going on. We've been going all. We said we're going to go all over in 100 miles an hour, and
we didn't talk about mountains yet.
Oh, yeah, let's get to that. Let's get to that. So, what I do want to do in the last segment, I've decided now. We are going to talk about how we got here and what's broken about. I personally blame a lot on the educational system, but that's what segment three is. Me, how do we train this better, and how do we?
We only have 9 minutes for the education system.
I feel like this has already been 75 minutes of content. We're fine. Okay, so you've also, first of all, you've been in a plane. That's pretty cool. You went at Mach speed. You're going faster than the speed of sound. That's insane. Talk about the mountain climb and talk about the marathons and the running, because that has got to be, when you talk about sexual self-actualization and mental place, like I run for 30 seconds and my ADT kicks in. I'm like, I'm over this. So what I do is I hop on a really intense HIIT machine and I play video games while I do my HIIT machine, because 40 minutes and 800 calories will go by and my body doesn't feel, because I'm completely distracted. So my body
can do it, but
my brain is not wired to do that stuff. So I found a workaround, but your brain apparently either you wired to do so. Talk about the distance stuff and just the wear and tear in your body of hiking and doing these marathons and things.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is, hey, you're brilliant for coming up with that, because whenever I hear someone does not get a natural high from, say, running or biking or hiking, I am like, I don't know how I would ever do it if I didn't get the natural high. So I think it's easier for someone like me. I'll just put that out there. And I started running when I was a little kid. Like, I would run to the store. I would run to the mall. I ran everywhere. I just was into running. And then it gave me a buzz. I'd probably be on a lot of medication if I didn't run. It's just the thing that keeps me mentally sane, talking about mental health.
Yeah.
And mountain climbing. So I run, I put a race on the calendar once a year. I have one in March, Spartan Race, 10K. Oh. Otherwise, I don't stay in shape. The fear of having a heart attack says, man, you better get in the gym. Yeah. You better run today. You better do some legs. And the mountain climbing, though, I kind of backed into that. My son had turned, our second oldest son turned 14, and I was like, we need to hike a 14er. 14,000-foot mountain in Colorado's got over 52 of them. And so we went out and we hiked it. It was, at one point, lightning was above us. At one point, it was next to us. And at the other point, it was below us. This was Mount Elbert in Colorado. And I was like, we're going to get electrocuted. If we go down, we have to go through lightning now. What do we do? Yeah. And it snowed at the top of that mountain on July 7th. That was our first 14er. I probably should have never gone back, nor should he.
Take it yourself.
But we've done dozens since then, and I take groups out, and it's
cool. What's your favorite?
Oh, favorite? Well, it would be in California called Whitney. Mount Whitney is the tallest mountain in the States. It's such a bear. I mean, we were almost delusional when we got to the top of it. You should do these in 2 days, like get near the top, camp, then summit. We do them all in 1 day. It's too much, but...
I got to imagine it's amazing bonding time. I imagine a lot of the lessons in life and business, are that's where they're being taught, especially to your son, but the groups you're with also.
We had one dude who was, we brought a recovery group with us, and this guy had been in a recovery house, and he had 6 weeks off of heroin. And somehow he summited
Longs
Peak,
here.
Which is a big mountain in Colorado, and came down. He had a lot of help, but he did it. And this dude
probably never did a heroin again. That's probably not very natural detox, huh?
And I've checked in with this guy, and he's doing great. But just have that accomplishment. Certain people just need to have accomplishments. Wow. You know, when we do that, we release dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, and we get that natural.
And you know what? You get on a high for quite a bit.
But you know what it is, though? So this is a big problem with the world in psychology, the dopamine rush. The dopamine is to get to the top. The serotonin floods the top. But that's a long way of dopamine, seeing that top. Every inch you get closer is like that dopamine drip, which is what social media and everything's trying to duplicate. So now that you put it that way, I'm climbing a freaking mountain.
Our listeners on dopamine right now, so we're going to give them a break.
Good.
And we'll be right
That's your best
back.
Segue ever, Trip.
Yes. Yeah,
that
so
is your best break.
To the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here with Andy Christensen, Trip Job, and we have covered so much. I hope you appreciate the lightning round because this is knowledge, but most importantly, this is real talk. We don't even have a script in front of us. I have a list of what Andy's done, and that's the extent of what we've talked about. We've weaved in, we've weaved out, but I promise you, if you listen in whole, you're gonna sound like we know what the hell we're talking about, which is always the goal of this thing. But what I want to end with is, all right, so... You have the Chinese working 90 hours a week, putting out economic output, learning, electric cars, chips, all the things that we were so good at. We are breeding children that are coming out with none of the skills that are required for the workforce that's in front of us. Entrepreneurship is not taught. We are pretty much taught to be sheep. We are taught to hear one level of history of this country from a white European man's background, not the struggle. We don't learn. I don't need a fix of the educational system, but what do we have to start doing? What can we start instilling in our kids to make them more equipped for what the future will be? Because right now I am worried that superpower status will not be lost because of economics, but because of the workforce that we are putting out there.
Dropping the anvil.
I had to do it. It's just been brewing up in me.
I love it. Yeah. I have this big idea, opinion, I guess I'll say. You went to get pizza while you're in Queens through, you know, part mafia, part gangs. Who knew what you were going through? And I don't know if we do enough of that anymore. I'm not saying everyone should live in that type of an area, be, you know, put to harm. But our lives are so easy now as kids. It's cushy. And so they don't have to work hard.
We're protected.
Their parents do everything for them. Yeah, mom and dad can help me if I need help. And I'm not saying we were that much of a better parents. We made our kids cut grass and do chores and stuff where most people didn't. But I think a lot of it comes back to upbringing and helping our kids do hard things. Are they doing hard things anymore?
So the only challenge I'm going to give there is that it has been proven time and time again that your upbringing these days solely relies on the amount of success and money your parents have. That they're not kids rising from adversity anymore. They're not kids. Those kids are the ones that get into the violence and the drugs because we've segregated those neighborhoods so far away from each other. So my challenge is, I completely agree with you, but if that was the case, why are there not more people rising from the lower class and the middle class to the upper class? Because it's not happening anymore. The American dream, when my grandfather came from Italy and my mother came from Italy, was work hard and you can make it. We have lost that in the culture of this country. Talk about culture. We've lost that. People don't feel that anymore.
But even any levels of adversity, going back to, you know, the stat about 92% don't want conflict, I don't think we teach any level of adversity. It doesn't have to be maybe the same levels that we had, but you know, I think one of the greatest quotes I have is you know, the founder of Spanx talked about their family every day at the dinner table, talked about, what did you fail at today? And I just you know, it doesn't have to be running through the middle of Queens, but I think having those things of adversity, learning to overcome those, is something that
we're terrified of failure. And we instill in such young children the fear of, oh, God forbid this teacher doesn't like you. Yeah. And I'm not going to put a criticism of teachers. They do omens work. That is an impossible task to take these people. But I am saying that not everybody learns the same way. And if she got a bad English grade but a great math grade, she's going to be a math kid. Why is this so complicated? Right? And then the problem is like in Brazil, if you are a dummy, you go to trade school to learn to work with your hands. They clearly say you're not going to be smart. Why are we making kids that are not built to be in this world, in this fast-paced literary world? Why are we? Go be a plumber. We need plumbers. We're not instilling the value set which best represents what we need out of these people, personally, I think.
Yeah, I think it's back to every 4 years you're a freshman again and we're not embracing that. We're stuck in senioritis. Well, this is the way we've always done it in the educational system. You know, I have a friend who's high up at Coke, and he says now, I don't want people with degrees. I want them with certifications. He'd rather have someone with a local certification like UX designer user experience.
And those are free, by the way. You can get an AI crash course from Google so fast. If you really do it, you're going to be better equipped than most of the people out there.
Well, that's his point. He said, I know they can come in and hit the ground running, where if they have a four-year degree somewhere, I'm going to have to apprentice them.
Yeah, especially if it's a liberal arts college.
Well, and they took the initiative maybe to get that certification.
If they did both,
right?
They're in the catbird seat, yeah.
Right. So, okay, what... you know, what are your other thoughts around how do we grow this next
as with our kids? Yeah. What other things can we do to get them more equipped?
All right, I'm gonna give you the key to my second book that's coming out, and it's all around one question. And I think if we could populate this with, I want to help 100 million people get purpose statements, and it's by this question: if you had $10 million in the bank, what would you do for work?
I would put it into an annuity that makes 7%, and I would travel the world.
Yeah, so you become a traveler. But if you had...
And I would document my travel because I would want other people that have the opportunity to do so to travel in the way I do, because I'm not a big money spender. I'm going to find the little nooks of the world that no one's ever seen and go enjoy the best of that culture and share it with the world.
I just don't think there's enough people that are thinking through what is my unique ability in this planet? And they're just going through school... And then maybe they get an accounting degree and they become an accountant. Nothing wrong with being an accountant.
Yeah.
But if that wasn't your dream or your passion, you may not be a great accountant.
Do you believe that the corporate leaders of America are more like your buddy at Coca-Cola, or do you more believe that they want the sheep to just do what they say? Are we seeing a changing of the guard there? Because it's not going to happen there unless we make a change at the top.
I'd still say they're sheep.
Yeah, it's a damn shame.
Yeah. I say the boomers have been doing it the way they've been taught to do it by their mentors, and I think Gen X is following suit with boomers. I keep asking and wondering, will millennials who have been complaining about how things are run, we're not self-actualizing anyone, we're not with purpose statements, we don't have our core values on the walls, are they going to do it?
Yeah.
Or are they going to follow suit and be sheep?
I love it. So by the time we air this, the book will probably be out. So tell people where to find the book.
Yeah, you'll be able to find it on Amazon. My website, andychristensen.com. as well, and it'll be called Minute to Meaning.
And I'm going to do that with my sales team, and then I'm going to do the opening for this show. I'm going to do a little blurb of what I learned from asking them from my sales team to make sure we had some practical application. And because we talked about it at the end, I'm going to start with that. Then we'll really do this thing full circle.
Fun.
This was a good one, Trip. I think we did a good job, man.
No, and now Andy, I learned about your exercise habits too. So now
there you go.
No surprise, you're multitasking there, but.
There you go.
Andy, this is awesome. And you've been listening to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. And we'll be back next week.